Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. It's Eddie Trunk, and it's time for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which, of course, is new every Thursday. Podcast One, Apple Podcast, and let us not forget, now available totally free via Spotify. You don't need a subscription. Just search for my name, the podcast, on any of those platforms. It'll come up. Won't cost you a penny. You can download it. You can stream it. You can do whatever you'd like with it. And be sure to check it out when you get a chance. Hope everybody is having a good week, safe, healthy week as we continue in pandemic mode. Still waiting for information on when we may see concerts come back. I think it's going to be quite a while, especially for large-scale shows. From what I'm hearing, I mean, there are some people that are reporting that this could be a year to 2 years. I know in New York City, concerts have been canceled through June. I know in Los Angeles, they have said nothing for the rest of the year. So it is going to be a while. And unfortunately, if you just look at the reality of it, concerts are probably the last thing that they're going to address, given the economy, given the airline industry, travel, bars, restaurants, all of that needs to be figured out. So unfortunately for us music fans, it's going to be a long haul, I think, before we see live music anytime soon, especially at a larger level. Maybe some small club shows at some point, but who knows? Everybody's just sort of navigating this and figuring it out as we go along, and that's the best we could do at this point. And I'll keep you posted with what I find out. But needless to say, if you are holding tickets to shows anywhere for anything and it has not yet been canceled or postponed, you definitely want to take a good look at that before you decide to go. And everything is different state by state, case by case, but use your best judgment. And hopefully, if stuff is being postponed, you are at least being given the option of a refund, which I think is so important. And many artists and promoters doing the right thing. As a matter of fact, Live Nation and AEG, two of the biggest promoters, the two biggest promoters in the world, recently announcing that they will absolutely offer 30-day windows on any postponements for refunds on your tickets. Very important to a lot of people struggling right now with finances given the shutdown across the world. So we're here to bring you, I'm here to bring you another great interview this week, and this is one of my favorite ones. You know by now that all of the interviews you hear here on this podcast originated and first aired live on my daily Sirius XM radio show, which, by the way, despite the shutdown, I'm still doing brand new shows every single day, 2 to 4, 10 to midnight Eastern, on Sirius XM volume on channel 106. And the cool thing is, if you're in the U.S. or Canada and you are not a Sirius XM subscriber, you can still hear my show because until May 15th, they are offering it free streaming on the app. So get more information on the website, get the Sirius XM app. You can listen to my shows totally free, even if you aren't a subscriber, through May 15th. Details on how to do that on the app and on SiriusXM.com. So all of the interviews you hear originated on that radio show and aired there first, and then after a week or two, some of them I repurpose here on the podcast as just a tiny little taste of what I'm doing. It's a great thing for people that don't get Sirius or XM, or it's a great thing for people who are outside the U.S. and Canada, a way for them to connect with my interviews and my shows. Been doing some great stuff lately where I've been asked to be a guest on other people's shows and programs, and that's been a lot of fun to do. Maybe you've caught some of that stuff. And most recently, Sully Erna of Godsmack, who I had on my show and I'll bring to you as a podcast at some point soon. Sully asked me to go on his show. He's doing a YouTube show. I mean, all of these artists are trying to get creative, try to do some different stuff. Many of them not used to being home. And they're just trying to come up with ways to do some things to connect with their fans, whether it be social media, whether it be online performances, YouTube channels, whatever the case may be. So Sully, a couple weeks ago, launched this series called Hometown Sessions. And it's a video deal that he does from his house. And he interviewed me for it. And that is actually going to be airing today at 6 p.m. Eastern time, I believe it goes up. Just search for Sully's YouTube channel, Sully Erna YouTube, and it's free. And we had an hour video conversation, and he even did a little Stump the Trunk. So check it out. Thanks to Sully for having me on his program. And it was fun to visit with him. So that's just the latest of some of the recent in-depth interviews that I've been the subject of. I did a real long one also on YouTube with Mike Brunn. If you search that, you'll see it come up. I was on with my buddy Izzy Presley on his podcast. There's been a few. I'm probably, and I apologize for getting one. Oh, my buddy Nando, who is out of Brazil with his Wikimetal page. So a lot of cool stuff. And I'm even going to do, I've not done any of the live video chat stuff, but I'm going to try to do an Instagram live at some point for the first time and connect with you guys that way. All my social media is simply at Eddie Trunk. So keep an eye open for that. Also, I want to thank those who have ordered videos, personal video greetings from me via Cameo. You may have heard about this site, Cameo, and it's an app and it's a site, and you can go on there and there's all these different personalities from the world of TV and sports and radio and acting and movies and what have you. And for a fee, you can get personal video greetings. So a lot of people have been on me about doing that for a long time. And I finally went on it a week or two ago. And a portion of the proceeds from that went to charity from everybody who ordered last weekend. So that's a very cool thing as well. A lot of interesting interactive video stuff going on. And honestly, some of it's hard to keep up with because everybody is literally doing it. But there's some cool stuff out there to check out for sure. Speaking of cool stuff to check out, what an interview I have for you this week. Now, when I am interviewed, I am often asked by interviewers who my favorite people to interview are. And I consistently give this answer. Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony. Two of my favorite people in the world. So much fun to talk to. And I had a chat with them about 2 weeks ago where we just shot the shit and had the best time just talking rock, talking Van Halen. We did a lot of Van Halen talk and also about what those guys are doing in light of the pandemic. Sammy and the Circle have a tour coming up, which is very much in question like all tours. We just got into a lot of great stuff. And a lot of aspects of this interview made news when it initially aired on Trunk Nation, my Sirius XM radio show, especially the part about Sammy talking about the fact that he was not responsible for the keyboard dominance when he was in Van Halen. Interesting thoughts on that. So Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony, almost an hour chat with two of my favorites. On this week's Eddie Trunk podcast, I am very excited for you guys to be able to hear this. I think you are going to love it. What's not to love about these guys? They're always just so real and honest and upfront about stuff and so much fun to talk to. So that's coming up on this week's podcast. I hope you enjoy it. I thank you for listening. Listen to me daily on volume, SiriusXM 106, doing Trunk Nation, 2 to 4 and 10 to midnight Eastern on channel 106. And again, follow on social media at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. All righty. I got to do a little stop down here, but when we come back, we'll get right into it with Sammy and Michael on this week's podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, I got a new podcast coming. It's called Theory.
Don't you know?
This is Theo Rossi. Our world is changing. For many of us, it'll never feel the same. The important thing to remember is that we are all in this together. And that's some of what I want to talk about on my new show, Theory. We're going to discuss the things that no one ever does. The real talk, the sacrifice, and the struggle that everyone goes through. My life has kind of put me in a unique position to see things honestly. This is Theo Rossi, and my new show, Theory, launches on April 8th. Officially on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, let's get to our interview this week on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. As I mentioned, two of my favorite people talking about all sorts of great stuff here. Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony, of course, two former members of Van Halen. What does the future hold? Well, it's anyone's guess, but a great hang with these guys. Recorded a couple weeks ago. Think you're absolutely going to enjoy it. And here we go. Take it away with Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Two of my favorite people in the world are three rocket scientists here. It took all of us about 20 minutes to figure out how to do a conference call.
Come on. It took the bass player to do it.
Well,
it
we should
the
get
bass player to get anything done around here.
Sammy, we should give credit where credit is due. Michael Anthony was the one that figured out the conference call on
today,
an iPhone.
Anyway. You know, hey, Sam, today will be my day.
I'll drink to it, Mike. I'm telling you. Yep. But
well,
listen,
let's not get
Eddie,
started there, Sam. It's way too early in the day.
What do you mean? In lockdown? They moved the needle, man. It's not 5 o'clock anymore. It's noon now.
It's
during lockdown.
It's vacation right now, right?
Yeah. Now, listen, Eddie, when you first called me, just saying I'm going to put you on hold and get Mikey on the phone, I started laughing. Instantly, I just started laughing out loud, and I almost couldn't stop because I could see his face. You know, we've been on lockdown. I haven't seen my brother now for a month.
It's been a month. Where were you guys when all this stuff went down? Where were you guys weren't on the road, right? Where was everybody home?
You know what? It all started coming down right, literally, Sam, I think it was right before or right after we were supposed to leave for South America, which was, I think, March 12th we were going to leave from South America.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, the first gig was the 13th or something. And yeah, that's when it happened. You're right. You know, Mike, I'm sitting there scratching my head going, I don't know.
And luckily we made the right call.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a good thing you didn't go over there and get stuck.
We'd be hanging down in Brazil or somewhere like right now.
We'd be worse than it. We'd be like in Guatemala in some concentration camp or some American holding tank or something. Man, eating army rations or something. You know what I mean? Out of cans.
I didn't realize you guys were going to South America. Did you? Has the circle gone down there much? Have you done stuff? A lot of stuff outside of the U.S. with this band, Sammy?
No. No, we this was our first South American tour for me. Mikey's been there with Van Halen.
Yeah.
Jason had been there, I think, but not me, man. I never played in South America, and I was so jacked. Shows were, you know, sold out, most of them, and it was like really something else. And then all of a sudden, the government said, "No, you know, I was checking with some of our friends that we have, you know, in the business and the government and stuff, and saying they were saying, no, if you leave the country now, you might not be able to get back in." And we're going, what? And boy,
yeah,
sure enough.
They're saying, but if you really want to come down, you got to do this, that, this backup, that, have this way out, and whatever. And we're like, oh, my God. You know,
it was rough.
That's too bad. It's too bad because there's, as Michael, if you, you've been there, like Sammy said, you know, they've got there. I've been there a bunch of times. That metal show was really popular throughout there. I've gone down there a few times, and the rock fans are unbelievable there. I mean, you talk to any bands and they're always like, my God, South America, it's like a whole different world, how into it they are.
Yeah. As it was getting closer to us, you know, going down there, you could see, like, between our Instagrams, there were a lot of comments and a lot of likes coming from South America now, you know, and I saw a lot of people starting to post up because, you know, you get tagged and all that stuff. A lot of posts coming up of from people in South America, and I don't know what the heck they were saying half the time, but they were all a lot of exclamation points, and I guess they were excited for us to come down.
They were saying Chingon and, yes, and Que Bueno and the Toto Madre and all that stuff. That's what they were saying, Mike. See, you just,
is that what it was?
You just didn't know. Yeah, you just didn't know how to interpret it.
Not a something like that.
Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. With Sammy, even your time in Van Halen, and Michael, throughout your whole career, it always struck me that Van Halen was more U.S. based. You guys did with either version, either lineup. Michael, even with you in the early days, did you guys go out of the U.S. much? Did you tour internationally a lot? It always struck me that Van Halen was just American thing.
We started to. Well, actually, you know, our first tour in 78, we opened up for Sabbath in Europe, which was part of our first tour, the second half of the first tour that we did in 78. And then, like with Samuel, we've been a little bit to Europe, and then we went to Japan.
Twice,
a couple times in Japan, but I don't know.
You know what the problem was, Eddie? This sounds like a bullshit thing, but it is not. We were at the point where when we did an American tour, we would do 3 and 4 nights in every city. We'd be doing like 135, 140 shows in a year in America. Just trying, you know, because everything was sell out so fast. We said, oh, yeah, add another one. Oh, sure. You know, without thinking, at the end of the tunnel, man, you're going, man, I just did 140 shows. You guys want to go to Europe? Nope. You want to go South America? Nope. It's like, I just want to go home. And they said, yeah, let's go home and make a new record. Next thing you know, we're in the studio making a new record and going right back out and doing it again. The success of that band was, like, bands do it now. You know, Chili Peppers, people like that. They go out for 3 friggin' years touring the world, and we just didn't do it. It was just a different kind of a deal for us. I don't know what we were thinking. Our management was calling the shots more than we were. We were just partying and having a good time.
You know, I got to tell you, the last thing on this is really funny, which supports this point. So I don't know if either of you guys are familiar with this new band made up of a bunch of older guys, but this new band called Sons of Apollo. It's Mike Portnoy, Jeff Scott Soto, Billy Sheehan. So it's this, you know, it's this proggy supergroup. So they released a live concert DVD. They played with an orchestra, and they only had one album out. They did it, I think it was in Romania, Bulgaria, or somewhere last year. And they do a set of covers at the end because they only had one record to play. And one of the covers they did was In the Cradle Will Rock. And the singer,
you know what?
Jeff, jumps into the audience and he's running around sticking the microphone in various people in the audience's mouth to sing the chorus. And they don't have a clue what the song is. And I said to Jeff many times, I'm like, they got no clue over there.
I saw that on YouTube. I saw that on YouTube. They start off Cradle Will Rock, and then it goes into some kind of, then they really take it somewhere. They go off into outer space after that.
But Jeff,
hey, Jeff Scott Soto's a great singer. That guy, yeah. I just ran into him last year in the beach at some little restaurant I like down here in Southern California, a little pizza joint, and he was sitting in there, and I hadn't seen him forever. And it just reminded me of what a great singer that guy is. You know, he's been in so many bands and so many different situations, but he can sing anybody's shit, man. He can sing my stuff. He could sing Steve Perry stuff. You know, I mean, this guy could sing, man.
Oh yeah, so,
yeah. He would have me come down. In fact, I think at least a couple of years in a row, he invited me out when he was there out my way over the holidays. I saw Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Yeah. Yeah, but the motto of the story is that I bust his balls about this all the time because I'm like, you are out there with your dick swinging, man. You got all these people. You're trying to get them to sing a chorus with you, and it's funny as hell on the video. Yeah. Every time he puts the mic in front of the fan's face, they have no idea of the song. And I'm like, the motto of this story is Van Halen, not big in Bulgaria.
Yeah. Well, probably just never toured there. Who knows, man? But I know it's really funny because when we toured, we did a stadium tour with John Bon Jovi right before the band broke up. That was probably what broke us up. And Van Halen, we opened for John Bon Jovi in Europe. And it was like when we played, you know, it's like 60,000 people and every night. And when we played, there was like about 10,000 people in the front going crazy. And there was about 30,000 people just walking around looking at us. And then when we finished our set, those 10,000 people split, and all these teeny boppers came running up to the front for Bon Jovi. It was weirdest thing for me. I thought, what the hell is going on here? You know. But you're right. Yeah, you know, you got to go out and work the world, I guess, if you want to be, you know, international now. But I mean, with the internet, people can see you and see everything you do. So that's what happened to us in South America. Is we had never been there, and we've only had one record out, you know, with the Circle. And man, we were selling tickets like crazy. And like Mike said, the craziest thing was my Instagram and Facebook and all that. Number one country, you know, Brazil. You know, Sao Paulo, Santiago, all the places we were playing had more following there than even in St. Louis, you know, or Chicago or Detroit. It was freaking crazy, man. It was pretty cool. I was really excited about it, and I guess I say we're bummed about it. But hey, listen, unless this is the end of the world, we'll do it next year or something. You know, we got to do it.
Well, what about the tour? What about the tour you had scheduled for America? Now, that, as of now, is still on. I know you're supposed to start in July, and I know you originally had Whitesnake on that, and then Coverdale announced he can't do it. He's got some issues, some medical stuff. So what's the status of the U.S. tour?
Well, Live Nation says until a further notice, they're just leaving things as they are. But, you know, there's a possibility of it postponing the first leg, and then we'll look at the second leg. The good thing about our tour is we're in three legs. We're July, August, September. And so if July gets canceled or postponed, we move it to September or to October, and then we can start in August. And, we can keep stacking it around. Then we get into winter, we'd have to go indoors or something. But, listen, I'm going to get out there and play, otherwise I'm going to go crazy, and I don't want Mikey breathing down my neck about, hey Sambo, hey, when we going out? Hey Sambo, when's the next gig? You know what I mean?
That's only because my wife, he breathes down my neck to get my ass out of the house. You know, the only thing that's really crazy though now, Eddie, is that you start to read in the trades and stuff like that, that they talk about when everything starts to calm down and people start kind of coming out of the, you know, they're letting people out again or whatever. That it might take a while for like the concert business to build back up, because a lot of people still might be kind of gun shy, so to speak, to go to a concert and be around a bunch of people like that. So,
and they might be broke.
Kind of crazy thinking about that.
And they might be broke.
They might be
that's
broke.
The other exactly. problem yeah, is there's a true, ton of yeah. people without money right now that lost their gigs. I mean, I'm optimistic, and I kind of feel like it's all going to bounce back real quick once we can all get going again. But then again, I'm lucky. I've been able to continue to work from home and use a home studio to do my shows or whatever. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of people out there hurting. There's a lot of people that I talk to that plunk down big money to go see Rage Against the Machine or something, and at the time they could afford $1,000 or $2,000, and now all of a sudden they want their refund when things are postponed, because they're like they need the money, and I feel for them. So it's just a crazy time, and nobody really knows how this is all going to wrap up. What have you guys been doing in the quarantine, Sammy, starting with you? I mean, I know you guys wrote a song, which we're going to touch on in a second, but have you, everybody's just been home? Are you both in California?
Yeah, Mike and I are about 40 minutes apart.
Like, no, it's not even that. We're probably about, well, shoot, with 30, the way traffic is 20. Now, probably maybe about 10.
yeah, no traffic.
Sam's exactly. just right down the beach from me right now.
Yeah, you can get a lot quicker around LA area right now. Southern California's got to be a breeze on the roads at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I haven't went out for 28 days. I just walk on the beach, or you know, that's the most I get out, and I look down.
Sam, you told me that you hadn't even been dressed in 28 days, though. You said you didn't even get dressed, but in your pajamas the whole time.
I'm in my bathing suit and a t-shirt right now with no shoes. That's the way I roll every morning. It's my uniform. You know, I'm kind of like one of them guys that has a uniform. I wake up, put on my bathing suit, just thinking, well, maybe it'll get hot and sunny, and I'll go outside.
And if anybody's seen. Goes on Sam's Instagram. He just did a nice little tribute to Bill Rip Withers. Rest in peace, Bill.
He just passed away, right?
Great, Yeah, and Sam, you shaved. I noticed you shaved.
I shaved.
And I looked at it a couple times. I'm like, Sam, you look different.
I fucked up. I shaved my beard off, and that sucker hasn't been off for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's white under there, brother. I'm looking rough. I'm hiding out. I'm growing it back, man. I'm telling you, I'm like a bum. The next thing I might do for Instagram, Eddie, will be I might sing the Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd, but I'm going to go, I have become a bum. A comfortable bum. That's what I'm becoming, man. It's like, this is killing me. I don't know how I'm going to snap out of it. I'm liking it. You know what I mean?
Well, you're liking it. You're good being home. You like being stationary.
Totally, man. I don't have nothing to do. You know how busy I've been my whole life? I've worked my whole life like a slave, and now all of a sudden I wake up in the morning, and Dakari says, what do you want to do today? And I go, nothing.
Sammy's retired. Finally, it took a pandemic to get the guy to retire.
It's temporary, though. It's temporary. Listen, it's temporary. When this thing blows over, I'll be out there, man, like a horny dog, man.
We're ready.
Open everything.
Eddie, like you said, we're going to touch on the thing that the song thing that we're doing some more of that. You guys are going to see a little bit more of that from us because
we're working on one right now.
Tell me Funky Feng Shui. Michael, that started with you in that bass line, or where'd that start?
This was something, Eddie, that we've got a couple of handfuls of things we were jamming backstage that we were eventually going to start working on. When we were on tour, we'd just be jamming this stuff before we would to warm up. And this was one of them. And
it was the last one. We played a San Antonio gig. Yeah, and we just start jamming that funky riff, you know.
It was pretty fresh in our head. So, Jason, he's laid down a beat, Jason, to it. He remembered the lick, and Vic added it on, and we just kind of stacked it. I didn't even know what the heck I was going to play.
Well, it's fun, man. It's a fun, funky little tune. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I finished the lyrics, so now we have a third verse and a bridge. And we didn't even think about that at the time. We were just jamming that riff, and it's so cool. I'm going, man, I got to finish this thing up. So I finished the lyrics, but it's so funny. The last time we were jamming it in San Antonio backstage, just warming up, we just jam. We don't sit there and play songs. Sometimes we do, but we mostly just somebody – Jason will be playing a beat, and Mike will jump in, and I'll start yelling and screaming some stuff. That's just what we do, the way we warm up. And then, when we start playing this riff, I called it Funky Feng Shui, because I'd been making this joke about that, about Funky Feng Shui. And it's where it came from was when you see, like, these really, at the beach here, you see these really gorgeous Southern California girls, man, and they go around with these dogs, right, on a leash on these trails, and you're walking on a trail, and you see the dog taking a dump, and you see the girl putting on the bag over her hand, and then bending down, and you're walking by, and she looks up and goes, hi, and she's picking up this big pile of dog shit, and it cracks me up, because I'm going, the way they're doing it, like, they got their posture's all nice, and so I started calling that some. I said, "Man, that's some funky funk sway right there."
I know exactly what you're talking about. So I'm laughing.
Can you kind of get like what the video might be about?
Somebody call Joe Satriani's kid right now and tell him you got the concept.
I already did, man. Shit, that's been done, man.
ZZ's on it.
Thinking about it right now, man. Oh yeah. It's fun. This whole lockdown thing, it brings out a different style of creativity. It's what my favorite part about making that video and for the internet and all this stuff was that we actually did it on our iPhones from our homes, and it was like it didn't cost a penny. If you go into a studio with a band and a crew, it costs you freaking 10 grand a day, and you'll come out in a week, for 40, it costs you 20, 30 grand to do a real recording and a video and everything else to go with it. And we did it for free on our phones, and it's badass. It's like, hey, it don't have to be all polished up anymore. It made me feel really comfortable with doing it raw, man. Mike and I we've been talking about this since it happened. Mike's going, now let's not make these too slick. I'm saying, hell no, you know, our manager saying, we'll get a video crew over, you know, and I'm going, get them fucking guys out of here, man. We got iPhones and selfies. I'm going to do my next one in the shower.
What? Yeah,
the thing in the shower.
What was the so Mike, let me ask you this. Sammy's obviously in semi-retirement and loving it, walking on the beach, watching girls pick up poop. What have you been doing? I know you got a boat.
Hold on. Listen, that don't sound right.
It's what you're doing. You wrote a song about it.
Oh, boy.
Michael, what have you been doing? What's been going on there? You taking the boat out? What are you doing?
You know what? Well, we've got our little electric boat, our little Duffy boat. That's kind of like standard issue down around here or whatever. We've been on that a couple of times, but it's a ghost town down here because normally spring break, Newport Beach, California, come on. It's like you can't even walk 2 feet without bumping into someone in a bikini or whatever. You know, it's just like crowded and it's a ghost town, but it's pretty scary because I'm actually, when I start having now meaningful conversations with Alexa, I got to get out of the house. I'm starting to have meaningful freaking conversations with Alexa.
Well, Mike, hold it. You're not telling the whole story. You're actually talking to Samuel Jackson. Your Alexa's got Samuel Jackson voice on it.
You can actually pull up Samuel L. Jackson on your Alexa now.
Is that right?
Yeah. If you dig far enough, you could actually ask Samuel L. Jackson like what the weather is, or you can say good morning to him. And you flip a switch, and he'll do Pulp Fiction for you.
I got to tell you, speaking about sound, you know, because we were joking at the top of this about three of us trying to figure out how to do a conference call. I'm going to sound like the old guy here now, because I got to tell you, I got one of those Alexa things. I pull the plug on it constantly. I'm freaked out having that thing on. My kids always turn it on. I walk by, yank the cord right out of it. I feel like it's monitoring me, man. I don't like that thing on. I'm afraid of it.
Someone's listening to you. You remember a little while back on the news, some kid was on it, and all of a sudden some voice goes, or I don't know if it was one of those Alexa. Oh, no, that was the Ring security thing.
What happened?
Well, you know, the security camera where some lady's doing housework, and all of a sudden she hears a voice go, hey, baby, how you doing today?
Whoa.
Coming through that. But, yeah, you know, it's kind of, I mean, over at my house, there's, you know, they can monitor my family all they want. They're not going to get anything that they can use for anything from over here.
Well, I can't say the same. I can't say the same, but I can say that at least Alexa listens to me. My wife don't. See, somebody, it's the only person in my house that listens to me, so I love the bitch.
Hey, the good thing you guys live in a big house over there, because I think the guy's going to be, if Karen hears any of this, you guys will be living on one end of the house.
There's a lot of friends that we have that are musicians that they got a big itch to get out right now, and it's not so much because they can't wait to play music again. It's because they got to get the hell out of their house.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm horny to play. I must admit, I hope to God that things settle down and it's safe, because I don't think Mike and I and any of the guys in the band would want to go out in a dangerous situation,
right,
and have people contact, you know, get sick at one of our concerts. I'd break my heart. So, you know, I just want this thing to go away and, you know, get a vaccine or whatever needs to have to happen. But this lockdown thing, like I said, for a guy that's been, man, you know, on the road and traveling the world my whole life, it's like sitting home, it ain't so bad for me, man. I'm just sitting here going, well, I mean, I hope it don't last too much longer, but
Don't start knitting any sweaters or anything, Sam, because, you know,
no,
we're going to be back out there.
I'm writing lyrics, and I'm cooking, and I'm doing some pleasurable things, and I don't know. It seems like it's a good reflective time for me. On a serious note, it kind of has made me wonder, you know, think about what I really want to do. Like, okay, when the curtain opens up, you know, how are you going to present yourself now? You know, it sounds crazy, but just having the complete downtime and not having to, perform is an interesting thing for me. And that's it. I don't know, not going out in public, all those things. It's like maybe that's like these recluse artists, you know, when you see them and they're all weird all the time. You know, it's like you go, man, that guy gets on stage, he's weird. It's because you know, he's a recluse and he gets out there and he's uncomfortable. I feel like I might even be uncomfortable on stage, you know, if I hit out there tomorrow morning, you know, I'd be like, wow, ooh, man, I still know what to do here.
But you know,
probably like riding a bike or having sex, you know, it all comes back, right?
But you know, I never, I never thought about this for either of you guys from a musician standpoint, right? Of course, I'm not a musician. I'm on the road a lot, but nothing like a touring musician is. But I never thought about this. For each of you guys, I mean, this, Sammy, for you, this is probably like the first time in almost 50 years that you didn't have that cycle. Like, it's not your choice. You can't do anything. I've never thought about it from your perspective. It's like, it's got to be almost sort of weird. Same with you, Michael. I mean, there's always the next thing. There's always the record, the tour, the interview, the this, the that, the schedule coming up. Right now, everything's a big question.
Especially with the circle, because even like Van Halen, we would do like a cycle, and then there would be, you know, not much, but there'd be some downtime, you know, where everybody kind of go off. With the circle, it's kind of like a continuous thing, right, Sam? I mean, we're always doing something. We're working on something, or if we're not touring, we might play a corporate show here or there, you know, but, you know, we're always doing something. It's not like all of a sudden we just stop and nobody talks to anybody for like 2 months, 3 months or whatever, which is really cool, actually.
Yeah, the circle was put together to be a live band. We didn't even plan on making a record. It took 7 years or something to make a record because we had such a great catalog from our, you know, our history of songs to play. So we that band was formed to be a live concert touring band. And not that we did that many tours, but we played a couple shows every month. Like, that's the way we did it. We'd say, let's just go out and do a few shows. Everybody horny. Yeah, we got offered a private. And we can go play St. Louis. We can go play Detroit. And then, you know, just play three shows. But we did it every month. We had at least two or three shows. Yeah. And it kept us alive and, kept the crew alive. And, it was just a cool way to do it. We completely reinvented the game for ourselves. And then now, and so it made you keep my voice in shape. It made me go into my studio at least 3 days a week and just jam on guitar and scream and yell to keep my chops up, and everybody else did the same thing. So but now it's like I don't have any reason to go scream and yell and keep my chops up and or nothing. Like you said, Eddie, it's weird. I have nothing to do. It's like, well, what do you want to do today? Well, I don't know. What's there to do? Well, we can walk on the beach. Okay. that's it. And it's cool. It's interesting. I'm reevaluating a lot of stuff in my head. But not. It's not like it's going to change me that much. But I really do think this is going to change me. How? I don't know. But I'll probably be just as horny when I hit the stage. I'll probably get out and run around in circles. I don't know. But right now, it's a little scary. If I had a show next week, I'd be going, fuck, man. You know, I don't know if I'm ready. You know what I mean? Mm. It's trippy. I don't know how Mike feels about that. But Mikey, you know, he's
I'm ready to go at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to say.
But you know, but that's what Eddie. But that's what's really cool. That and I know a lot of other musicians are doing the same thing. You know, on social media or whatever. But it's kind of cool that we're doing this. That we did that the one song, and now we decided, hey, let's do some more of this because it's a way for us all, and obviously another way for us all to keep in communication with each other, and you know, and work on some music, and you know, who knows? You know, we'll throw in a couple cover songs. We'll you know, just kind of keep it out there, and it's cool for the fans too because I know they're. They're probably horny to go to a concert or, you know, going nuts with that, too.
So you're going to do more songs. Yeah, you guys are going to make more, you do more songs in the way you did Funky Feng Shui. You're going to do some more?
Yep, we're working on one right now. Jason already did the drums. It's a cover, but we ain't going to tell you the name of it yet. But it's Jason was the first one. It was his idea. You know, we just started texting and emailing and getting on the phone with each other and saying, well, what do you want to do next? Well, I say, well, what about one of that song we worked on backstage, that other idea? And Jason says, how about this? And he sends a track with him playing drums on it. We said, oh, fuck yeah. So he just, so Vic's got it now. And Mikey's got it. Vic's
I got it now. Balls in my court and see, you know, if I wasn't talking to you guys right now, I'd be getting some stuff done on that. But, you know.
That's a good excuse, Mike.
But, you know, and it's cool. You know, Eddie, it's not like we're doing the whole song either. It's just going to be, you know, a couple of minutes or whatever. But, you know, it's, and then we'll get on to something else. I mean, as long as this is going on where we can't get out,
this band is so cool because we've got such a high level musicianship in this band that we can bite off any damn song. It's so crazy. You know, like Jason's like, he's one of these guys. He knows every song that's ever been played on the drums. He knows Britney Spears songs. He knows freaking, you know, Maroon 5. You can't name a song that he don't know how to play. And so he's an instigator, but it cracks me up how deep musically this band is, that when Jason says, "Hey man, you remember this song?" and he starts playing something by, you know, KC and the Sunshine Band or his favorite, the Bee Gees. Okay, he's always playing Bee Gees stuff, and everybody backstage can just chime in. Next thing you know, I'm going, "Wow, we did that song pretty good," you know. So we're gonna have some fun with that on the internet, you know.
Hey, so let me ask you guys the last thing on that tour, assuming it happens, and we all hope it does. Are you going to replace Whitesnake, or are you going to just go out with you guys and I think it was Night Ranger? Have you looked at what you're going to do there?
No, we definitely want to replace Whitesnake with somebody on that level. We've never, the Circle, like we've always done Evening With, and even me with the Wobbles, you know, with Van Halen, we never put together a big package, you know, like, whoa, you know, that's going to be a big show. And so we were looking forward to doing this and, you know, playing for 15, 20,000 people every night. But so we kind of got geared up in our heads for that, and production-wise, the production we designed for. So we're definitely looking for the right act to fill that spot. And if we couldn't find someone, then, you know, maybe we would tone it down. I don't know. I'm not sure what would do. I've got my fingers crossed that we will find.
Yeah, at this point, we are looking for someone else. So.
Has anybody blown a call into David Lee Roth? I heard he's doing stuff again. Is that
maybe
all?
You should call him.
Is that all? I'm going to. Well, Sammy, you invited him to High Tide. You reached out to him for High Tide. I know Michael told me he was thinking about going to see him.
Yeah, but that was before we saw the Vegas thing, man. Whoa, man. That changed everything, man.
Dude, what? I guess I have to call Gene or Paul and ask how he was doing with them, you know?
Well, by every measure, look, in fairness to him, I'll say this. In every single person I talked to who saw him on the tour with Kiss versus the headlines, early stuff in Vegas, they all said it got way, way better. He tightened it up way better. But Michael, you never went, did you? You were talking to me about when I saw you in Punta Cana, I think it was, wherever we were. You were talking about maybe going to Vegas.
Yeah, I was thinking about seeing him at the Vegas show. But I think Sam, that's when we were playing in. We ended up doing a private somewhere.
Yeah,
it wasn't San Antonio. It was somewhere we were doing a private. Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, what?
In Hawaii. So I opted to.
That's right.
Private in Hawaii.
Yeah. We were in Hawaii, which was great. Oh man, you want to talk about it? When you go do a private gig, you get overpaid. You get overpaid. They only want you to play like an hour, you know, and they have to pull the plug on you. On us, you know, it's like, well, where you guys? Hey, this party's over. No, we got a couple more songs, and then you go lay on the beach for a week. Man, that was awesome.
So no Sam and Dave reunion tour. That's not
well,
in the cards.
Well, that's what it was. That's what Coverdale and I, that's what we were calling it. We were calling it the Sam and Dave Tour.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, it's
true. We tried it. But no, the Diamond, hey, listen, Eddie, you know, you're good friends with him.
No, I'm not. I don't know him at all. I swear to God, I don't know him at all.
You brought it up. No. Maybe you should give him a call and see if he wants to do the tour with us, you know?
I brought it up just because you said you need another band, and I know he's out there doing stuff. I thought it was a decent idea.
Come on, Eddie. You know, we'll give you a piece of the action.
Once I called out his backing vocals for being canned, I don't think he's going to take my call right now.
No. No, that was the best part of that show anyway. But
the canned vocals?
His backing vocals do sound kind of familiar to me.
Are they you, Michael?
I'm going to stop. We got to leave Diamond alone, man. He's not, at least he's out there trying to get something going, man. It's like, you know what I mean? You got to give him a little bit of love. So
yeah. Well,
yeah, hey, maybe he's the guy. Maybe if he was good, if he tightened it up a little bit on the Kiss thing, that would be a good show. That'd be, boy, that'd be a night of a lot of good music, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was not joking with that. I mean, I think it would be, I mean, it would be great. I mean, everybody said it got way better. His band got better. He got better. He stopped, you know.
His band was good. His band was all right. They weren't a problem.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I don't know. There's been crazier ideas.
There have been. Actually, when Dave and I did the Sam and Dave tour years and years ago before the Van Halen first reunion, and Mikey came out with us with the Wobbles and all that, that was a very successful tour. I mean, you know, we did huge numbers in all them buildings, and, it just got ugly. If it would have been friendly, it would have been even better, but mm-hmm. it wasn't friendly. That's the only reason why I wouldn't want to tour with the guy again, because he's just not user-friendly, you know?
Michael, no new developments on your end in the whole Van Halen world? Still radio silence there?
It's all written. It's crickets, Eddie.
Yeah.
Crickets right now.
Yeah. You know, about a month ago, last time I was in LA, I went to an Alter Bridge show, and who's standing right next to me in the hallway but Wolfie?
Him and Mark Tremonti are buddies.
Yep, and I said hello to him because I've met him a few times. Really nice guy. We had a nice, very brief just chat. How you doing? And you know, he's got this record. He's got his own record ready to go, and he wants to put it out. And I think the reason why it's probably being held is he knows if he goes out and does press stuff on the record, everyone's going to ask him about Van Halen. And to me, the smartest thing would be Van Halen goes out and his band opens and you go in and play bass, you know? I mean, that would make sense, but nobody knows what the hell's really going on. It's like the cloak of silence around that band.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they got themselves in some kind of bubble, Eddie, I'll tell you that, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard some stuff of Wolfie's on his Instagram, just little pieces of music. It's fucking good.
Yeah, everyone said it's real good.
And there's no question about it, man.
I heard it too, yeah.
Drums and everything. I mean, you know, the guy's a little... You know, fuck, look what he listened to his whole life, you know, as growing up, the music that he was hearing was on a very high level. So, you know, it could be really a good record. He should put together a band and get out there, but none of us can right now. So, you know, he's in the same shoes as all of us. So,
yeah,
you know,
I
guess when the,
no doubt,
when the world either ends or doesn't, we'll all get back to it. You know?
And Michael, have you seen these videos online that are of the early, like there's a guy in Fresno, out of Fresno, California. He's been posting videos. They're kind of bootleg videos, but man, they're amazing. Of you guys, Van Halen first tour opening for Black Sabbath, and then the tour for Van Halen 2. And I mean, you know, I was too young to have seen the band then. But my God, it's crazy, and I can't even imagine. I don't know if you've seen those bootlegs. It's called like Fresno Media. The guy's putting them on YouTube. Everyone's talking about them. And
John, I'll have to look at that. I haven't seen his, but I have lately been seeing some of the early ones. You know, obviously the quality's not all that good as the way it's presented, but.
I'll send you the links. Yeah. It's incredible. As a fan, I was so happy. You know, obviously people don't want bootleggers and all that, but I got to tell you, as a fan, I was so happy that somebody snuck a camera in there in 1978 and documented that, because there's no great early video of you guys playing live. And to have that in the way it is amazing. It blew my mind. I mean, I don't know where this guy's getting it from, but it's incredible that it exists.
Well, Eddie, you know, someone's got to have it. It's out there. But I know, as far as coming from Van Halen, now Eddie and Alex, they never wanted to do anything like that. You know, it's like they would always take the kind of like, let's be kind of a mysterious band, kind of like Led Zeppelin. You know, what would Led Zeppelin do? You know, would they put that to do something like that? You know, and so unfortunately, we never really documented anything like that. Whereas, God, everything Sammy and I, that we've been doing ever since Chickenfoot, I think that's great, though, you know, to be able to have a camera in there, even if you never use it, you know, just for a home movie. But, you know, we've got some great footage, even back, you know, with the Chickenfoot stuff.
Yeah, from the day I was unceremoniously thrown out of Van Halen, I said I wanted to be more like the Grateful Dead, and I never had any rules where you couldn't bring cameras or recording devices into a show. For the Wobbles, all the mirrors for the Circle, people are welcome. They can have it, and we're playing for them. They can document it. I think that's a beautiful thing, just like the Grateful Dead. There isn't a show that the Dead have ever done that isn't well documented from the fans in bootleg videos and stuff. And honestly, I dig the old bad quality. There's something more magic about that than when you see the super high def stuff now. It's too clean and it doesn't come off as rock and roll and down and
you know, like it wasn't doctored up with a bunch of, you know, people go in and they do other post production stuff, or they, you know, they enhance it or whatever. And back then it was just
this is what it was shot on, and that's it. That's it.
Well, it makes you feel, yeah, but it makes you feel like you're actually in the show, because if you were in that seat, that's what you'd be seeing and hearing. Like, even on these clips, and I'll send them to you, Michael, when we hang up.
Send me the link.
There's a guy, like, you know, he stands up during one part in somebody's solo, and you hear the guy behind him yelling at him, sit down, sit down. And it's like, you know, it's annoying that he's blocking the camera, but that's what, you know, that put me right in that seat.
Yeah, that's real.
Watching that show. I mean, it was just like, man, that's really cool. And another thing that connects that you guys can both speak on, I don't know if you heard about this, but I've read it already. Ted Templeman has his autobiography coming out, and he talks glowingly about both of you. I don't know if you had a chance to read it yet, but it's coming out soon.
No, I haven't read it yet. But
yeah, Ted said that some guy that wrote it, Ted's quote to me was 2 weeks ago. I said, we call him T.T., I said, T.T., what the hell, man? I said, you got a book coming out? I just heard about that. He goes, yeah. He said, it's great. He says, you know, and no, he said, he didn't say it was great. He said, it's kind of weird. He said, you know what? The guy that wanted to write it, I guess he wrote a Van Halen book.
No, you know what? Eddie, is that Greg Renoff?
Greg Renoff. Greg who wrote Van Halen Rising. Yeah. He co-wrote it. Yeah.
He did the Van Halen Rising. Yeah.
He said the guy did okay. He goes, but I should have proofread it a little more. He said, now that it's done, he's going, I read it a couple times, and he goes, you know, I cringe a little bit. So whatever that means. I guess he may have said some things he didn't want to say. But Ted's he's more private than Ed and Al put together, man. Ted, that's a recluse right there, man. He's a genius producer, but
I got to tell you, I read the book start to finish, and I mean, my gosh, especially by Van Halen standards with some of the other things that have come out. I mean, I didn't think, no, but Sammy, I'm not even talking about your book. I'm talking about Noel Monk's book and all this other stuff. I didn't think that there was the only sort of real drama that really comes up in the book. Well, first of all, he talks, which isn't the first time this has been talked about the fact that he wanted Sammy Yu to be in the band from the get-go. Like, he really wanted to replace Roth with you, but that's been out there
that's
a bunch.
So crazy.
And you never got on your radar back in the 70s, right, Sam?
No, it didn't.
Michael, how serious were those conversations with the band?
Oh, I remember they didn't get serious to the point to where obviously any calls were made or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I remember Ted, you know, talking to especially Eddie and Al and myself about it, you know, because even back then we were telling Ted, oh man, make us sound big and bad like that first Montrose record,
right?
You know,
well, I'll tell you what, when I had finished my VOA record, I Can't Drive 55 record, with Ted Templeman. He produced it, right? And we were working on the next record. And I came home from the tour, you know, and all that stuff, and from the VOA tour, and I was writing in my head. I was writing for the next record with Ted, and we were talking every day, you know, like, hey, man, you got any new song? Oh, I got this idea. And I said, you know, I just want to take my time. And I was really kind of looking to take a big break. And then Ted tells me, calls me and says, wow, I just found out it's 100% true that Dave left the band, right? Ted told me that on the telephone. I was sitting right at my dinner table. I looked at my wife, and I went, wow, put my eyebrows up, and I said, they're going to call me. I said that to her, and I told Ted that. I said, you watch. They're going to fucking call me. And within 2 days, Ed called me. It was just completely, you know, very psychic. But when I said that to Ted, he would have had the opportunity to say, yeah, you should have been in the band from the beginning, or, you know, whatever. But he never said that to me. The whole time I worked with him for, you know, 6-7 months to get, you know, on the VOA record and on the next record that never happened, as I joined Van Halen. And he never ever brought that up to me that I was the even thought about. That's so funny.
What he said,
he's a private guy.
Yeah, but what he says is that where he starts out feeling that way because of the, let's just say, vocal limitations. He then does a total 180 on Roth as he starts working with him, because he then says in the book he felt like lyrically And from a delivering standpoint, it turned out to be exactly what he was wanting in the band. So where he really, it started out being like, we need a guy who can sing. And then after he started working with him and he saw what he was writing lyrically and how it fit the music, he's like, no, we actually, this guy actually is the perfect guy. So he does a big turn on him. And the other thing that's fascinating about it, and you guys can tell me if you agree with this, especially you, Michael, you were in the band at the time, but he says, he says that he feels where everything went off the rails with Eddie was when Eddie opened 5150. He said because that felt like at that time he was left to his own devices and he could be locked in there. He tells a story about not even being able to get the tapes from for the 1984 album. He said he had a fight with Don Landy to get the tapes because those guys just locked themselves away and nobody knew what was going on. He physically couldn't even get in there. So he said that the whole, once he built 5150, he said that's when things really, that's what the problems began.
Well, he built his sanctuary there, you know, and like you said, I mean, that's totally true. He would lock himself up there. Him and Don Landy, we wouldn't see them for weeks at a time. They'd be in the studio. Who knows what was going on? But...
Well, we
kind of knew what was going on.
Yeah. Oh, man. Those were the days, man. You know, it's so crazy, the thought of Eddie building his own little studio like that and making a record like 1984. That was a great record, man. I don't care what anybody says. When I heard, here's Sammy Hagar saying this, right? When I heard fucking Jump on the radio, I went, holy shit, man. Like, this is it. These guys have got a real pop hit, and they're not a pop band by any friggin' means, but it's like, you know, it's so rare when a band is rowdy and is hard rock and edgy as Van Halen was to have a hit like that.
Sammy, when I first heard it, I as a fan, I said, oh, shit, but for a totally different reason.
Yeah. I know, but that's the...
And by the way...
I'm looking at it like...
But you know,
we all wanted, all of us hard rockers, you know, Ted Nugent, myself, and all these kind of guys, we wanted a freaking pop hit, you know, without copping out. And that was a damn good job of it right there. I don't care. Anybody, I'll argue any Van Halen fan to the ground on this one, man. That was brilliant.
But it's.
And I'll tell you.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'll tell you, that's kind of like when Dave started getting a little put off because, you know, originally when I remember. We were in the studio and Ed Al and I were kind of jamming on the idea for Jump. And Dave, the first time he came in there and saw Eddie playing the piano and the synth and whatever, and he's all, whoa, wait, no, you know.
Well, and, Templeman says in the book he was totally against it. He to this day
he was against it too. Yeah, because I thought, you know, Eddie, you're a guitar guy.
Yeah, you know, he said to this day, Jump and I'll Wait. He can't. He knows it was a huge success, but he can't reconcile it. He's the same way with me as a fan. He's got a hard time with it, even though it was, you know, a huge success.
Yeah, the only way they were even on board when we did The Cradle Will Rock was because Ed played it through this little shitty Wurlitzer electric piano through a stack of Marshalls. And a lot of people didn't even think it sounded like a keyboard.
I didn't
think it was a keyboard.
I had no idea it was a keyboard. Yeah. I never, until I started reading interviews. Too. And I had no idea that was a keyboard.
When I saw that Eddie, a genius guitar player, as good as he was, that he could play keyboards that well, to me, I was impressed. As a musician, I went, this cat is badass, man. This guy can, you know, he's a real deep musician. It just changed my whole attitude about that band. We jumped, and like I said, it wasn't like it was my favorite song. I just knew that it was a smash. I just knew that thing was going to cross Van Halen over to a whole different thing. And up until that point, I felt competitive with them. You know, I was out there, we were playing the same buildings, you know, we'd both sell out. And, you know, there was like a competition kind of going on a little bit, you know, in the earlier days of that. And we did shows together, some of them stadium shows early on with Black Sabbath and Boston. And but a long story short, when Jump, that was it. I said, whoop, boom, game over. These guys are done, hit the big time. And, you know, I know the hardcore people, I read about it all the time and I hear about it all the time. But truthfully, that was a brilliant pops off.
But wait, I won't keep you guys forever because I know Sammy's got to go watch the girls walk the dogs. But let me just this is fascinating to me. So wait, so Sammy loves it. I'm a hardcore fan kid working in a record store. I'm like, oh my God, what just happened to my band? Michael, you're in the band. When you first hear it and start recording it, where did you sit on Jump?
I loved it because that's, you know, because coming, you know, from a musician standpoint, you know, it was different. It was fresh and it was different than what we had been doing. And I guess maybe that's just, you know, when a band's growing, or, you know, hopefully growing, that you know, they're not doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I know that's, like you said, that Ted Templeman, what he didn't like when Ed built the studio, because when he built the studio, and, you know, first thing he did was put a big piano in there and whatever, and then that's when the music was starting to change from, you know, from what we had been doing on previous records, you know, where it was more just kind of raw, totally guitar-oriented. But I liked it myself because it was different. It was new and it was different.
And Sammy, it was one of the few songs that you did from that era when you were in the band, right?
That's because it was such a damn big hit, man.
Everybody wanted to hear it.
Yeah, it had to be done, you know. And it wasn't, like I say, it wasn't my favorite song to sing and all that. You know, lyrically, it was kind of silly. It just was so good. It was such a fun, make you smile, happy pop song from coming from a dark, heavy rock band. It was brilliant. That's all I could say. And I didn't like the other song you're talking about, I'll Wait. I didn't like I'll Wait. To me, that wasn't Van Halen. But now, now I'm going to justify my whole trip. Finally, I get my piece. I get my soapbox here. Everyone blamed me for the friggin' keyboard playing in on the Van Hagar era, you know, starting with 5150 and OU812. We went very keyboard, you know, oriented. I didn't do any of that. That's what Eddie did. Eddie wanted to do that. He liked playing keyboards, and he was freaking good at it, and he wrote these beautiful songs like When It's Love and stuff like that, and Why Can't This Be Love? That is such a cool lick. I mean, once Ed really got into
the keyboard thing, he barely picked up his guitar for a long time, I remember.
Oh, man.
He'd be just playing keyboards all the time.
So it wasn't like I'm sitting here saying, hey, man, let's do some more keyboard songs. I'm sitting here saying, what do you got, Ed? He said, well, I got this. I'm going, wow, that's great. I can sing to it because I can sing to any damn thing. So I'd start singing that, and we'd go, oh, man, this is so cool. And, of course, Valerie would come in and validate it. You know, she would come in when she heard, you know, Love Walks In, she just going, oh, my God. You know, and Eddie's going, oh, man, my wife's happy, so I'm happy. And I'm going, well, I'm happy. And you know, we had success and all that. But I kind of always got blamed for the keyboard songs. It was not me whatsoever. I'm a damn guitar player. Every time I would pick up, you know, like for Finish What You Started or something like that, when I would instigate a song, it was a guitar song because I don't play keyboards. So, you know, it wasn't me. I just went along with what we had. And if it wouldn't have been good, I wouldn't have went along with it. I'd have said, this sucks, you know, but it didn't. You know, the part that's most impressive to me is what a good keyboard player Eddie Van Halen is. He's got a left hand on a freaking keyboard that's as good as picking Bootsy Collins on the bass, man. I mean, you know, he's funky with that left hand. And, you know, listen to When It's Love, man. It's like, that's a really badass left hand lick.
I, as a lifelong fan of Van Halen and of yours, Sammy, your solo stuff before you joined the band, I never, ever thought that was coming from you. The way I read that was, because anybody with a brain in their head, all they had to do was listen to 1984. You hear Jump, you hear I'll Wait. Okay, Eddie's wanting to go in that direction as a musician. And now here comes this guy in Sammy Hagar who can sing the shit out of anything. And now he's got a voice that can sing the phone book and make it sound good. And now it's really going to open the floodgates for him to want to go down that road and be more musical because he's got a guy that could deliver a vocal for it. That was my take on it.
Boom. Well, you know, Eddie, no wonder you're a genius. No wonder you're still in the business thing. No wonder you never got thrown out of the business. Hell, you know what you're talking about, bro.
Also, up to that point, you know, everything that got written, you know, is all based off a guitar riff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dave would scream. Dave would start, you know, hooping and hollering and over the top of it, you know? And when Sammy joined the band, it changed that dynamic a lot too, because also with Sammy being a guitar player and understanding music and chord structure and all that stuff, you know,
Yeah, that kind of
just got a little bit help it along too. Yeah.
Well, look, I don't want to keep you guys forever, man. I could because
wait a minute. Whoa! You keep saying that, Eddie, and then you start some new ass conversation.
Well, I want to give you. I want to give you an opportunity to plug your respective stuff, Sammy. With you, you've got. I know you got another season of Rock and Roll Road Trip coming, right?
Well, season 5. Yeah, we got a few good things there. My favorite one of the season 5 so far that's in the can, you know, they have, I think they start the end of this month, but was Ted Nugent. I went to Ted Nugent's freaking ranch or whatever you want to call it, his hunting lodge or whatever hell it is.
Compound.
And brother, we had a day that was unbelievable. That guy is he is something else. Man.
I love Ted.
There was no...
Okay, Sam, what happened? I saw the commercial for it and it showed a little clip. Ted standing there. And you're shooting his bow and arrow, and I hear this, whoa! And then they cut it. What happened? What happened when you shot the bow and arrow?
Well, I pulled up a little bit, and it kind of... it went over the target I was shooting at.
Yeah.
And there were, like, people in
the... into the side of a neighbor's house? Or
well, no, there ain't no neighbors, let me tell you. No, he's got 1,000 acres or something. But there were, like, some workers that shit back there. And I pulled up and missed the damn target, you know, so that we had a pretty trajectory. We had to yell, not four. You know, that's for golf, man. I don't know what you call for bow and arrows, man, but it was like 3, I guess. 3! But no, it was an amazing thing. Ted is so intense. He's so for real.
Yeah.
He's not an actor. He's not bullshitting. He's not an act. That is the real deal, that guy right there. And, man, it was quite the day. He wore me the fuck out.
Don't tell Sammy.
Place, I said, man, I need it.
Sammy, don't you feel that Ted is unbelievably underrated as a musician and overlooked in a lot of ways? I know he's got strong views as a, you know, whether it's politics, hunting, whatever. All that aside, purely for what he's done in his career and as a musician, as a guitar player, the records he made, I think he's unbelievably overlooked.
He plays a version with me sitting in a chair, and Vic Johnson was with me to testify. He sat down with his guitar and through this little amp in his living room, and he started playing Stranglehold. Holy shit, it sounded like a 50-piece band by himself. He's got a feel. I mean, he's badass, man. I mean, he's crazy as a loon, so, you know, makes people, you know, he pisses people off. He says crazy shit that makes you say, Ted, don't say that. Even on my show, let me tell you one part that ain't in there. He said, at the end of the day, I didn't realize this. He goes, okay, we're all done, right? I said, yeah, we're done filming. He goes, okay, good. Now, here, I'm going to make you, you know, some dinner. And he took me in the backyard. He had just shot a deer, skinned it down, had it hanging by its freaking feet, you know, and he was going to cut, and he had a barbecue out there ready to go, and he was going to cut a big chunk of meat off and cook it for me right there for the cameras. I said, Ted, we ain't going to put that on my show. I love you to death, but we ain't going to put this on the show. He's for real. I mean, he's badass. Like I said, this cat can play guitar, man. It's like, you know, he can get sloppy because he probably don't practice and stuff, but his feel, man, you know, he's always talking about James Brown. Yeah, he's like that. He's the white James Brown on his right hand. Same thing. He's got this badass right hand for rhythm. And, man, when he was playing Stranglehold, dude, Vic and I are going, holy shit. There it is, man. You know, you don't need a drummer and a bass player, man. It's just, he was really good. So, yeah, season 5 coming out. It's going to be fun. And, that's all. Oh, wait a minute. There's a lady out there with a bag in her hand. Hey, I got to go.
Well, real quick.
It's a German Shepherd, too.
Oh, I got you. And what about this Vegas residency thing I heard floating around out there? Are you still trying to do that?
Well, Vegas is shut.
I know, but when it starts up again.
We're gonna do it.
You're going to do a monthly, or what are you going to do?
I don't know. You know, the circle, we're just kind of, we can do anything we want. So I was thinking, yeah, monthly. Maybe we just play a weekend a month and invite friends, just like the birthday bash. Kind of throw the birthday bash every last weekend of every month.
Don't let out any of the details. But it's gonna be a very cool thing. It'll be almost like a full day hang. Plus, then we're gonna play.
So kind of like Mike, a one day, Mike, sort of like a one day festival.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, you know, just kind of an environment. We're going to create an environment.
Spend a day with the circus, yeah.
All right.
Like, just like you would just be like a day in the life I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, we're going to build it out and make it look like a specific thing so that when you walk in, you're going to be transported. And that's the idea. Instead of just doing a residency, that's one thing. But no, we want to make it like a weekend of like, wow, this is so cool, and bring friends and jam with us and, you know, sit in just like the birthday bash. You know, I want to recreate that fun thing, because it's so much fun, the birthday bash, having all them people to come down every year. You know, that changed my life for musically. It's like Mike and I mean, when we look, we made a list. I couldn't even tell you off the top of my head how many people have, you know, in the business have come down and jammed with us for the birthday bash over the years. And that's one of the most special things musically in my life. Like I've said, if I had one thing I just would do for the rest of my life, it would be that. I would just say, let me just go on stage at the Cabo Wabo and just play with a bunch of different people, with my friends and
band. So anybody who's been down to the birthday bash, that's the type of vibe, the type of experience, you can say, that we're going to create down there.
Yeah, we're going to try to create something like that in its own way, and just make it every weekend. I mean, every month or whenever, have people just say, "Oh no, we're going. What are you doing this? Oh, well, we're going to Vegas, man, for the party." You know, you never know who's going to be there, and who knows? You might see Eddie Trunk there even.
Oh, I love Vegas. I love you guys. I'll live there, man. I'll be there. I'll be your host. I'll be your host, Toastmaster,
Eddie,
when people walk in.
Eddie, we know you go where the tequila is, Eddie.
Oh, I go. I had one good night with Sammy up at the Cabo Wabo years ago at the Vegas stop. You set me up at that top little area. And then Sammy does, what do they call that, the Irish goodbye, when you disappear without saying goodbye, just because you just, poof, he just evaporates.
Oh, it's an Irish goodbye? Is that what it is?
I've heard that called the Irish goodbye, where you just suddenly just disappear without going around and saying all the goodbyes, and then you just get a text later. Hey, man, you have fun with the rest of the stuff I left you. I'm out of there. And by the way, I understand that completely. I respect that move, Sammy. I really do.
Well, shoot, I thought it was the Italian goodbye, but I didn't realize it was Irish. So
I am Italian. I'm not Irish, but I've never heard of it for Italians.
Yeah, what happened to Sammy? He disappeared. That's the Italian goodbye.
And Mike, the hot sauce. Tell me, let Michael do one thing on the hot sauce, man. How's it going with Matt Anthony?
Oh, man.
The hot sauce is going great, Eddie. We're opening up areas. In fact, in your area out there on the East Coast, we're coming your way.
Oh, you're going to open?
Yet, but we're,
you're going to open like restaurants?
We're coming your way. Yeah, you know, restaurant chains, you could say. Yeah, but we're working on it.
All right. Well, I love it.
I keep telling Mike he needs a Matt Anthony's Cafe. He needs a real place that you can go to and say, oh, now I get it, with all his hot shit, man. Mikey's got the best palate for hot sauce than anybody I know. And I'm not joking. I'm telling you, all my chef friends, Guy Fieri and these guys that, you know, they got chili peppers tattooed on them too. No, Mikey is the chili pepper king. He has the palate for it.
No, I love the stuff.
It's unbelievable.
I love the stuff. That's why I asked.
Guys under the table. Not
and
with
Eddie,
booze,
Eddie
with
if you're running low, Eddie, I'll say
I think I'm good at the moment, but I'll definitely hit you up when I'm ready. Okay. I appreciate it. Hey, you guys, I appreciate the time, and I know the fans appreciate hearing from you, and I hope that everything works out with the tour and it gets on track and we get through all this madness, and I really thank you for some time today.
Hopefully everything will end soon, and we can get back out there doing what we love to do.
In the meantime,
thanks for keeping rock alive, man. You're as big a part of keeping rock alive as any band, and that's the God's truth. And that's not an ass kiss. My nose is not browned up on this one. That's the truth. You keep rock alive as much as any band, any musician on the planet. So,
well, Sammy, I appreciate that. Let me tell you something real quick. Last time I saw when you guys launched The Space Between, and I intro'd you guys at the Troubadour, I don't know, you guys played that show, you left me a really nice voicemail, which I still have. And you said that you love me, and you said if you played an instrument, you'd be in this band. Sammy, I've been practicing.
Well, now,
But what instrument, though, Eddie?
Tambourine, Michael.
Yeah.
Tambourine. One hand tambourine, the other cowbell. I got it both covered, so there you go. I got a very easy rider. I don't need much per diem. I'll be all good.
Okay, all right. We got room on the plane. Okay, all right.
Guys, thank you, man.
Hey, yourself, Eddie.
Best to your families. Love you both, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, Eddie, yeah, we'll be out there soon.
All right, take care, guys. Thank you.
Well, always love talking to those guys, and that visit was no exception.
Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony. What a great hang, as usual, with those two great musicians, great friends, great people. Hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. Remember, new episodes every Thursday. Continue to spread the word, even though I've been doing this podcast for years. It doesn't hurt to get the word out there and tell others. It's totally free. Podcast One, Apple Podcast, or, of course, now on Spotify. At Eddie Trunk on Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook. EddieTrunk.com is the official online home. Katie Irizarry is the producer of the podcast. And remember to listen to me every day, Monday through Friday, Sirius XM volume, channel 106 for Trunk Nation, 2 to 4 and 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Everybody be safe, be healthy, and I'll catch you next Thursday for another all-new podcast here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Have a good week, everybody. Take care.